How many of you have read the book of Ruth in the Old Testament? Oh, a bunch of you. Awesome. If you haven't, I strongly suggest that you read it as you would read a story or a novel. It's only four chapters long, and it is very rich with tradition and history and with symbolism in our faith, and especially the story of the line into which Christ was born. When Jesus of Nazareth was born, he was born into a line of a family, just like you and I have been. And we're going to explore that a little bit more today. Ruth and her mother-in-law, who was named Naomi, are quite a pair of strong and creative women. They were both widowed and trying to make things work in a patriarchal society where a woman without a man was hardly able to survive. In their covenant to survive, they modeled the sacrificial love that God offers to plant and harvest in people. Let us read. We've read the text from Ruth, but I want to add to that the gospel lesson for today, which I hope to kind of weave in with the story from Ruth. I would like to read from Mark chapter 12, beginning with verse 38. Mark 12:38 through 44. See how these fit together. As Jesus was teaching, he said, "Watch out for the legal experts. They like to walk around in long robes. They want to be greeted with honor in the marketplaces. They long for places of honor in the synagogues and at banquets. They are the ones who cheat widows out of their homes, and to show off, they say long prayers. They will be judged more harshly." Jesus sat across from the collection box for the temple treasury, and he observed how the crowd gave their money. Many rich people were throwing in lots of money. One poor widow came forward and put two small copper coins in. Together they were worth a penny. And Jesus called his disciples to him and said, "I assure you that this poor widow has put in more than everyone who's been putting money into the treasury. All of them are giving out of their spare change. But she, from her hopeless poverty, has put in all that she had, even what she needed to live on." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. I've titled our sermon today, "The Widow's Mite." And you might think that it's punctuated in a funny way. I've got a play on words for you here. The story that we've just read from Mark, the story of Jesus and the widow at the offering plate, is the one that we call the widow's mite, M-I-T-E. That's another word for a little bit. The widow's small coins that she put in. And that's one way to understand this phrase, the widow's mite. But I would like for you to consider, now with the Ruth and Naomi story, the might, the power of the widows. They had a power that enabled them to trust in God for not only their every moment, but for their future. And that shows some power. That shows some strength of courage and character. I'm intrigued by the use of the word redeemer. Here, this mother-in-law, daughter-in-law pair, Naomi and Ruth, are talking about their future, and their future is rather hopeless. In a patriarchal culture where the men rule and where a woman without a husband is in bad shape, they talk about a redeemer. And when Naomi convinces Ruth of the plan and Ruth goes to Boaz and they become a family and they bear a child, Naomi refers to that child, whose name is Obed, O-B-E-D. Naomi refers to that child as their redeemer, the one who would redeem them. Now, maybe it uses a small R there instead of a capital R like we might use when we speak of Jesus as the Redeemer and Lord. But it's interesting that that term is used here hundreds of years earlier in the Old Testament. That term, Redeemer, which we have applied to Jesus, was an effective term for one who redeemed his family or helped to bring his family forward. As we hear the story unfold, we see that this child that is born to Ruth and Boaz is named Obed. And then Obed's family bears a child named Jesse. And Jesse's family, Jesse was the father of King David, who was the great king of the Old Testament, and one of the people in the line of Christ, the lineage of Christ. When we read about the birth of the Messiah, Jesus was born in Bethlehem, the city of David, and a descendant of David, the model king of the Old Testament and the model king of the New Testament. Jesus is born into this lineage. So Ruth and Naomi are two of the only sisters that are mentioned in the family trees. You know, in family trees in those days, you read the lineage stories in Matthew and Luke right at the beginning of each. They have mostly men's names because the men were the ones that counted. But you get to Ruth and Naomi, and they name Ruth because Ruth bore this child, which was the forerunner of the Redeemer, this child who was the one who would provide a way for the line to continue, even though these women were both widows. And this line would continue up until the time where Jesus the Messiah was born from it. What a great link this is. This concept of a Redeemer. You know, we use the word redemption pretty loosely. We talk about redeeming a coupon and for a few cents, you know. And a lot of times on the coupon, it'll have fine, fine, fine print written on there that'll say something like cash value 1/20th of 1 cent or something like that. Unless you redeem it for the actual cause that it's made for, it's almost worthless. A coupon that's never redeemed is worthless. It's worth nothing because it has not been applied. But here in this story, we have the concept of redemption or redeeming. Redeeming not for a purchase, but for a people. This concept of the redeemer of a family is foreshadowing the whole story of Christ's redemption for people of faith. So redemption for us and for them, the people of the Old Testament, these folks we've been talking of, Ruth and Naomi and their families, redemption for them and us means the difference between a hopeless end and an endless hope. For them, the hope of the Redeemer points the way to the line of succession right there in Bethlehem. Boaz and Ruth, Obed, Jesse, David, and eventually Jesus. So, the words might and mighty sound a little alike. But when you talk about a mite as being a small amount like a copper coin, and then you use the word mighty, we are counting on God's grace and endless hope in God. The greater the need, and the greater the need is, the greater the redemption is. And we all need a Redeemer. We need the courage and strength that comes from Christ. We need the humility and hope that comes from Christ. There is grace in this story. It's interesting to read the genealogies of Matthew and Luke. They really are very different. Matthew's starts back in the Old Testament with the patriarchs. Starts with Abraham. Abraham. And goes Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and mentions all the patriarchs and names of the Old Testament that you would know, beginning with the 12th chapter of Genesis. And Matthew's genealogy, starting there with Abraham, moves forward up until the time of the birth of Christ. Luke's genealogy has some different names in it, but it also is structured differently. It starts with the time of Jesus and works its way all the way back to the beginning, as if to say that the fathers are more important than the sons, the mothers more important than the daughters. It works its way all the way back, and it goes all the way back to the garden, to the first chapters of Genesis, all the way back, and it finally ends up saying it's son of, and finally son of Adam, in talking about the birth and genealogy of Jesus. So they're very different, and yet they have a purpose. The terms begat, you know, when you read it, if you read it in the King James Version, a lot of people get stuck and say, well, let's just skip this part because it's all these begats and begots and we don't really know who all these people are anyway. But there are some treasures to be found in studying the genealogy and the history. We don't want to overanalyze them because that's not why they're there. But they are there to give a context. They are to give a purpose. They name the heroes of the faith that helped to establish Jesus' political and national and covenantal relationships. Matthew mentions Mary in the genealogy. Luke does not. He mentions Joseph. Luke goes back all the way to the garden, to the prehistory, and Matthew with Abraham. The genealogies are very different, but they do agree on the need for a genealogy. Seems like there is somebody in every family that does that. It is the need for a context. You really have trouble figuring out where you're going until you figure out where you've been. I've got Aunt Tommy in our line, and it's really good to see where we've come from and maybe a little bit about where we're going. But you know, when you get back more than three generations or so, it gets pretty spotty. The information's hard to come by, and every little piece matters. Records are not good or not complete or not even available. The elders sometimes forget. Courthouses sometimes burn. Memories fade. But as the generations balloon out, we get to follow the line of our own story, just as these stories trace the line of Christ. In the Naomi and Ruth story, I like the concept of gleaning. These two are able to glean whatever remains in the field. It's a humble task, but it's one of survival. And it's one way that they continued their story, even when times were difficult. Women find a way, even when the men think they are in charge. But often in the background, sometimes right up front, the women rule. You've had a sister pastor here at First United Methodist Church. And one day you will have another. Some of our best leaders in the conference are women. And I like that. So never underestimate the work of women in the story of God's people and in the life of the church. We have evidence of such leadership right here in our own congregation. And here in today's stories, we have evidence of it in Scripture. This widow's mite that Jesus talked about in the New Testament, the gospel lesson that we read today, how Jesus praised her for giving all that she had, for giving until it hurt, giving what she couldn't really spare. And, of course, the story of Naomi and Ruth, who were so bold and strong and were important in the line of succession of our ultimate Redeemer, Jesus of Nazareth, Jesus of Bethlehem. We talk about Jesus as the Redeemer, and as Jesus redeems us and the world, we celebrate what that means, that our debts are paid that our future is secure and that our hope is alive, even in Christ. And here's the punchline, or let's call it the power line. What we offer to God may be feeble, but God can make it good. Young or old, male or female, rich or poor. What we offer to God, God has the power to make it good. Like the widow with the copper coin in the temple, we offer our mite, our little bit, and God can use it for something mighty.